Greetings, this is Sky and Telescope Editor-in-Chief Bob Noya. I'm on the phone with Dr. Luke Keller, a physicist at Ithaca College in Ithaca, New York. Luke is the author of our feature article about SOFIA in the October 2010 issue. Luke helped develop one of SOFIA's major instruments, the forecast instrument, and he's a member of the science team as well. Luke, thanks for taking time out to be interviewed for this podcast.
Pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
Now, as your article describes, SOFIA's telescope saw first light from the air in late May of this year. How are things going with the mission right now and since the first light flight?
Things are going very well. As you saw, and your readers probably saw, the images were released, and we were very pleased with the results. The telescope is working well. The images are clear, and the image quality is what we expected. The forecast camera is also working well. At this point, we're preparing for another series of short test flights with the telescope working as it did during first light. Those will be in early this fall, and then immediately after those, we're preparing for the first science flights where we'll actually spend the entire time doing astronomy instead of testing the telescope.
And when do you think we can expect the first really exciting results from SOFIA? And what are some of the first major science flights going to be studying?
There are two projects that have been chosen for the first science flights. They are imaging studies of star formation in the Orion Nebula and imaging studies of the Galactic Center, the Milky Way Center. And those were chosen because they have a wide appeal in the astronomical research community and because many of the sources in those areas were too bright for Spitzer to do all of the projects that people wanted to do. And so those will be flights in late October, early November, and we could expect to see results from those, I would expect, within a few weeks of the flights. It could be earlier, but the astronomers that are involved in these projects will be analyzing the data and making sure that they have everything in order.
In your article, you talk about how SOFIA will bridge the gap between ground-based and space-based infrared telescopes. How will it accomplish that?
Well, the ground-based telescopes, of course, can be much bigger because they don't have to be carried into space. And so on the ground, you have necessarily higher imaging resolution and a lot more flexibility in using the latest technology. Space telescopes, there's a volume and mass limit for the instruments. So although the seeing is, of course, not an issue, the sensitivity is much higher from space because the telescopes can be colder. They can't usually be as big. And so SOFIA has the ability to fly to skies that are much clearer and more transparent than from the ground and carry with it technology that's much newer than what you see in the space telescopes simply because of the time that it takes to develop them. Furthermore, SOFIA can basically observe at any wavelength up from visible light out to submillimeter, almost radio wavelength. Just if you develop an instrument that's sensitive in one of those areas, SOFIA can be morphed, if you will, to observe in a very broad wavelength range. So while telescopes that go into space usually, for various reasons, have niches, they choose certain wavelength ranges and certain instrument capabilities to concentrate on, those don't necessarily match the capabilities from the ground, and there are often gaps in wavelength coverage, and SOFIA can fill in those gaps.
And one thing you mentioned in your article in the biography is that you're particularly interested in planet formation. So what do you hope to learn from SOFIA observations that'll tell us more about how planets form?
Planets form, we're nearly certain now, in these protoplanetary disks of material that orbit young stars. And those disks emit light very brightly in the what we call the mid-infrared, wavelengths from about 5 microns out to 50 or 60 or 70 microns. And that's because most of the material in those disks is dust, which is warmed by the central star. And that's exactly the area of the electromagnetic spectrum that many of the instruments in SOFIA have been designed to help us probe. So I'm looking forward to much higher spectral resolution, in other words, much more highly detailed spectra so that we can do studies of the chemical composition of these disks. And even more exciting for me is studies of the evolution of the chemical content. So as planets form, the chemistry in the disks will change with time. And if we observe many systems at different stages, we can try to understand the very early process of making the material which forms planets like the ones that are in our own solar system.
And what are some of the other science objectives? I mean, I know that SOFIA is going to be studying a wide range of objects, both inside the solar system, in our galaxy, and beyond. Talk briefly about some of these in the article, but what are some of the major results that we could be looking forward to?
Just amazing how many different projects, some that I'm well aware of now in our own solar system, astronomers are looking forward to studying the atmospheres of the giant planets. And of course, they've been doing that for decades now and have learned quite a lot. But some of the molecules in the atmospheres of those planets have features in their spectra which are not observable from the ground because the Earth's atmosphere absorbs the light in those regions. And they're essential to understanding the dynamics and the chemical evolution in upper atmospheres. And they can actually allow planetary scientists to study what's going on down deeper in the atmosphere where we can't see directly because the material is processed low in the atmosphere and then because of weather is brought up to the surface that we actually are able to see. And so there's going to be quite a lot of work done in those areas. Farther out, we'll be able to observe objects in the Kuiper Belt and try to understand their chemical composition. Comets, as they come in close, will be a major target, and there are people looking forward to using SOFIA for both imaging and spectra. And then further afield, of course, we're going to be doing a lot of study of young stars, star formation, and then later on in the evolutionary process, the formation of planets, as I was discussing. Some of the instruments are actually specifically designed for studies of galaxies, and in particular, the very active galaxies like Seyfert galaxies and starburst galaxies. These have regions that are very, very active, we think forming massive stars. And some of the spectral features that are most helpful in determining the processes that are occurring there and exactly how the engines, the central energy source, are working are, again, obscured by the Earth's atmosphere and therefore not at all observable from the ground. So instruments have been specifically designed to take images of the galaxies but only in this very narrow wavelength band to understand where the star formation is happening and exactly what's going on there. So right from the solar system out to the very distant galaxies.
It's interesting because there obviously is going to be a finite number of flights in a given year, and yet we have all of these different science objectives. How are scientists allocated time? Is there, for example, like many observatories have a time allocation committee, how is it decided which astronomers get to carry out their observations and which ones might have to wait till a later time?
This will be done exactly as it is now for both ground-based and space-based telescopes. So as you mentioned, the Time Allocation Committee, which is composed of people very familiar with the observatory, but also active astronomers, and they will read proposals prepared by the people who would like to use SOFIA. And the criteria is the project proposed going to actually answer the questions that they proposed to answer? Is SOFIA the best place to conduct the observations, and can the observations be conducted so that astronomer will get useful data at the end? And that process will work. It's basically a process by committee, and they'll allocate all of the available flight time. So SOFIA will work just like if, for example, you propose time on the Gemini telescopes, the infrared telescope facility on Mauna Kea, or Spitzer or Herschel or any of the other space telescopes.
Now, I need to ask you this. You know, SOFIA has come under a lot of criticism because it fell far, far behind schedule and cost about three times as much money as it was supposed to cost. A few years ago, I worked in the Astrophysics Science Division at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, and I know that at that time, a lot of astronomers working in fields other than infrared astronomy felt very strongly that SOFIA should have been canceled years ago so that all of this extra money could have been reallocated to other space astronomy missions. Obviously, that didn't happen, and SOFIA's really set to get started with its science mission. What would be your response to that criticism?
Well, first of all, I share the disappointment. I've been working on SOFIA now for 10 years. When I started my first postdoctoral position after graduate school in 1999, working on the forecast instrument, I was told that we were going to be flying in 2001. So it's been quite a disappointing series of delays, and the reasons for those delays depends on who you talk to in the project. Essentially, when I answer the question, why was it so delayed and so over budget, I think that many people at various levels in the project underestimated some key features of the observatory and how difficult they were going to be. A perfect example of that is the hole in the side of the airplane in the door that opens and closes to protect the telescope when we're not observing. It just turned out to be a much bigger project than people anticipated. There were other problems, but I think that's really not satisfying for people who are critical of the project, because you might say, and you might be right, that that's just too bad. We were wasting money on something that could be allocated elsewhere. And what I have to say in response to that is, SOFIA really does have a unique niche, and it's even after Spitzer and after Herschel still has unique niches in astronomy that no other observatory will allow us to fill. In other words, it allows us to gather information that we just can't gather in other areas. And the reason for that is, kind of as I mentioned before, when you build a space telescope, because of the limitations in volume and mass, you really have to make difficult decisions about what instrumentation to include and what instrumentation would be nice but isn't possible. And that leaves gaps in the capabilities. And I think if we use SOFIA to its fullest capability, we will concentrate on those areas and not duplicate what the space telescopes and the ground-based telescopes can do. And that's something that will help us to develop the capabilities for the next generation, not the James Webb telescope, that's going up in just a few years, but the one after that will benefit just as Spitzer benefited from work on instrumentation in the Kuiper Observatory, the predecessor of SOFIA. Furthermore, this may cause some eyes to roll, but I like to remind myself, and people are often kind of surprised to hear, that although this is hundreds of millions of dollars over budget, one Hubble Space Telescope servicing mission costs hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not as if SOFIA is definitely unique in that it is three times over its budget, and that's a lot of money, and I don't want to diminish that fact. But on the other hand, astronomy at this level and planetary science at this level is very expensive.
And I should point out, I mean, you mentioned the servicing missions. I mean, a lot of other NASA missions end up behind schedule and over budget. Another example would be the Mars Science Laboratory, that they missed its launch window, so its launch had to be delayed 2 years, and I know that it's also way over budget and is still facing technical hurdles. Maybe this is a little beyond the scope of this interview, but for people who are concerned about this, do you see any way that NASA can get more cost certainty out of its missions and have these missions be built and delivered on schedule? But I say this also within the context that the entire NASA space science program, from planetary missions to space and airborne observatories to Earth science, has been a remarkable string of successes, with an overwhelming success rate and with most missions pretty far exceeding their design and scientific objectives. So I know that a lot of the missions are over budget, but a lot of the missions also greatly outperform the specifications as required by Congress.
I think those are great examples. One thing I would say about SOFIA is, and others have said this, other astronomers have said this, and many of the people who wish it had been canceled so that the money could have been reallocated, that is, we really need to deliver on the promises for the scientific return of the observatory. And if SOFIA is not able to fill in those gaps that I've been discussing and do the kinds of astronomy projects that I summarize and others that I haven't, we really should take a look at SOFIA, because even though it's built now, its annual budget will be near $100 million for the next 20 years. And if we can't return on those promises, then I'll be one of the first in line to say maybe we should rethink spending this money, because it's really frustrating to me. You know, it seems to somebody who's worked on some NASA projects over the past decade that the way of operating seems to be to give NASA a budget if you're proposing a project that NASA wants to hear. In other words, I think the people at NASA at the project level get an idea, just like they do in Congress, of how much things should cost, and then the people proposing to fulfill the projects try to meet those budgets. And sometimes it's clear to everyone, or nearly everyone, that it's going to be more expensive. But rather than saying we need more money right up front, we take the lower budget and then we ask for forgiveness later and ask for budget increases, and it causes time delays. So I think the answer to your question of how can we get through this is, just like with any very expensive programs in the government, we need to be more realistic about how much they cost up front, and we need to be willing to sacrifice and not do every single project, but instead do the ones that are most important to us as the astronomical community and the ones that we can therefore afford. I think a paradigm shift is necessary.
That was the questions I had. And was there anything else that I did not ask you about that you would like to discuss?
Well, one thing I know that many of your readers will be interested in following SOFIA, and I want to just mention, because we didn't have space in the article to do very much introduction to the fact that there's a very big educational and public outreach side of SOFIA, as there are with all of the big observatory projects. And there's a lot that people can do to get information. If you're a teacher, there's a program which will allow you to propose to actually collaborate with astronomers on SOFIA and perhaps even get to fly on SOFIA. And so I encourage people to hit the USRA and NASA SOFIA websites and learn about some of these programs and keep in touch.
That's a great idea, and I can certainly say in Sky and Telescope, we look forward to covering results from SOFIA in the future, and we're very much wishing you and your colleagues the best of success with this very exciting mission.
Thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to seeing some new things.